The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And we have made it to the final hour, and we are glad you're with us. That last hour was insane with Coach Mullen and Kirk back-to-back. It's been a while since we've been able to really spend some time with callers, so we will do that now. We still have Mike Tannenbaum later in the show, the former GM from the NFL. And let's get back to the calls right now. Buck Wild is up next. Hey, Buck.
Hey, good evening, Mr. Feinbaum. Compliment, couple of quick comments. Great interviews. Coach Mullen, Kirk Herbstreit, enjoyed that.
Thank you.
I didn't broach the subject, but a caller a couple hours ago mentioned a replacement for Nick Saban. Dabo, sure. He's got the pedigree, born and raised in Alabama, walked on at the university, earned a scholarship, played for Stallings, contributed to the national championship team, 92. Tremendous success as a head coach. Okay, can't argue with that. But it wouldn't break my heart to see Jimbo. Good fit for Alabama. Got the personality. Okay. Second thing was another caller mentioned people who lost money to Bernie Madoff were greedy. I bought my current home in a short sale back in 2010. Or no, I'm sorry. 10. I believe it was 12 maybe. But anyway, the gentleman I bought it from, he lost everything he ever earned indirectly to Madoff. He had his retirement and savings invested with an entity that was heavily invested with Madoff. This guy never heard of Madoff, but he lost everything. Mm. So don't chalk it up to greed, okay? I'm sure this gentleman did everything by the book his whole life, and then had it destroyed at a fairly late age and had to sell his home. So not everything is as it appears. All right?
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Buckwild. And for those who are wondering why we're talking about this, Bernie Madoff, who pulled off about a $65 billion Ponzi scheme years ago, easily the largest in the nation's history, died today. The only reason it even came up, and I mentioned this briefly, but Bernie Madoff spent his first year at the University of Alabama. I believe he left then to go to Hofstra. So he's not a graduate, but there are still plenty of fraternity brothers and people who have Bernie Madoff stories from that brief year. And he's from New York, so that's why, going to Alabama. If he grew up in Huntsville, it wouldn't be a big deal. But going from New York to Tuscaloosa back in the 50s was interesting, to say the least.
Well, Paul, I just hate to think that everyone who lost money.
No, you're right, because we've all been there, or we know someone who has, Buck. And I asked somebody once for, I didn't have a lot of money, but I asked somebody who was in the industry, if he could recommend, somewhere to invest. And he gave me a guy couldn't have been a bigger loser. He probably should have gone to jail, but he didn't. I realized then, one person's opinion, that could have, by the way, if I had been wiped out at that point, it wouldn't have mattered. I didn't have enough I was a young person, and it really didn't make any difference. I was, I lost 2 years of trying to earn money off of very little. It's heartbreaking to hear the stories from Madoff and countless other people. It's a terrible thing that has happened to many people in this country.
Well, countless don't even begin to describe it. I mean, there are so many people that were ruined by what that man did that they'll never be heard of.
Buck, if you lose your life earnings, there's nowhere to go. Yeah, I mean, I remember in 2008, as I'm sure you do, a lot of people in this country went to bed that night wondering if they'd have anything the next day. The country was in such dire straits. Fortunately, the government intervened, and a lot of good and terrible companies were bailed out.
Like I said, what that man did is unforgivable, and if there's a God in heaven, hell burns a little brighter.
I hear you. No, I can assure you I'm not offering any condolences to him. And everybody around him, well, I mean, I'm not going to say any more because, quite frankly, everyone knows the story there. Glenn is up next. Hello, Glenn. Go right ahead.
Jane Franklin left Vanderbilt, and how do you think he is done? Better than you thought? Worse than you thought? Or, you know, about what you thought?
You know, Glenn, it's interesting because, you know, Franklin has had success, and there's no denying it. And, you know, he won a Big Ten championship. He's come close to the playoffs a couple of times. But quite frankly, I thought he would do better at Penn State. He has had some mind-boggling game calls. And, you know, I'm not counting last year because that was an outlier. But I thought he was, when he left Vanderbilt to go to Penn State, I thought he was one of the top coaches in the country. And I'm not sure he's a good coach, but I would never suggest he's not. But I wouldn't put him as, you know, like Dan Mullen or Jimbo or Dabo or even Ryan Day in his own league.
Well, going forward, what do you see for him? Do you see a national championship, or you just can't see it?
I don't. And it was interesting that I believe Tennessee made a run at him. And yeah, I think sometimes, and this goes for all of us, whether we're coaching or doing whatever we're doing, but sometimes you just have to kind of look around and go, is there someplace else I should be? And I say that because I think Penn State is a phenomenal school. And the recovery that program has had, and I think Bill O'Brien deserves a lot of credit, the coach who's now OC at Alabama. But you can win championships at Penn State. I mean, they, you know, if you've ever been to a game there, there's nothing quite like a.
I went to Penn State. I've been there. But I just wanted to know.
Well, let me ask you. What do you think as a person that has an interest in it?
Yes, of course. Do you think he could win at the national?
I do not think he can win a national championship. And I know that's a harsh statement, but I just I think he's always going to blow a game or two that keeps him out.
Most of my buddies from Penn State agree with you. So I was hoping not for that. But anyway, good talking to you.
Hey, great to hear from you, Glenn. Appreciate it. It's those things are complicated because, you know, there are some schools that if you had said, okay, so-and-so at a major school, do you think he'll ever win a national championship? I'll go, not a chance. Penn State, you have to think about it because they are in a position to. But right now, I think Penn State has fallen behind Ohio State, and it may be a narrow gap if you look at the games sometimes. But I don't see them overcoming that gap, and that's the issue for James Franklin. Let's check out Mike, who is in North Carolina. Hello, Mike. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how you doing this afternoon?
We are doing well.
Hey, I just caught the tail end of your conversation with Kirk Herbstreit there, talking about his new show, QB21. It just got me to thinking about the show I'd watched on Netflix, QB1, about the up-and-coming high school quarterback.
Right.
I think Jake, Justin Fields. A lot of those young guys that have really came on or headed, you know, even headed to the NFL. But one thing got me to think was about that kid, Tate Martell, that transferred out of Ohio State to Miami. And from what I understand, he's in a transfer portal again. There was a huge buzz about that kid. I remember, you know, when he was coming into college.
Oh, sure.
Do you honestly think a Power Five school right now would take a chance on a kid like him? You know, somebody that's got itchy feet, seems like.
I mean, I'm trying to think. Has he been to two or three schools now? Did I miss one? Ohio State, Miami. Where is he now?
He committed. He's in the portal right now. He committed to A&M. He committed to Washington, right, like in the eighth grade. He committed to A&M and never landed there.
The answer is yes, because there are some coaches that will, you know, bring someone like that in thinking that they're going to win the press conference and gain some momentum. Coaches do some pretty desperate things. I think that's pretty self-evident. Yeah. We are heading to a break, and we appreciate you being with us. Mike Tannenbaum, bottom of the hour. If you're just getting on board, we just had Kirk and Dan Mullen on in the third hour, yeah? And we're coming right back for more of your phone calls.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We welcome you back. Mike Tannenbaum joining us at the bottom of the hour. Let's continue with more phone calls, and let's check in with Paul, who is in Arkansas. Hey, Paul, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, I just wanted to say thank you for having me on. Some months ago, I called in and I let you know that I had cancer. Well, things are better now. I've been through a lot of treatments. And anyway, I'm doing much better. So I just thought I'd pass that on.
I do remember that call. I'm so glad to hear that. And I mean, I know your family is as well. That has to be, not to state the obvious, but that is probably something none of us want to think about, but you had to go through.
Yeah, it was pretty rough at times, but anyway, it's I'm at a good.
That is great to hear.
Now, so, but I just wanted to compliment you. I've watched your show now for several months, and I am so impressed with your background. I mean, I don't know how many people you've interviewed, how many sporting events you've been to. Your resume is just impeccable. I mean, you are an SME for sports. I just can't.
Well, thank you.
You know, conceive the things you've been through. But my question is, I know here some time ago there was a Dallas writer that commented that Arkansas would just be a thump, so to speak, when we play Texas. And that kind of riled my innards a little bit, but I saw the FPI rankings, and you know, I'm just a little bit of, I don't know how we'll measure up, because Texas is talented. They do, and they got a new coach, and all that's going on. So I was just thinking, what are your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, on the game being scheduled.
Yeah, it's. I think it's the second game we play. I think
okay.
We play Rice, and then we play Texas the next game. But
where is the game? By the way, I hate to keep asking you all these questions. Do you know where the game is?
I think it's. I think it's in.
Is it in Dallas?
Fayetteville.
Oh, Fayetteville. Okay.
No, it's in Fayetteville, I believe.
You know, I would say in Fayetteville, I believe the Razorbacks have a pretty good chance. I think that's a tremendous home advantage. And I still think Texas is going to be going through a lot of transition, and I think they're in better shape than they were a year ago. But I might lean toward the Razorbacks in that game.
Yeah. And my next question is about Mississippi State. I'm like you. I just don't see it. I mean, last year, the Razorbacks, we had them figured out. I mean, we played back, and they only ran pass plays, the same pass plays they ran in the previous game. And our defensive coordinator, he had them smacked. I mean, I don't see if they do the same thing this year, I don't see how they're going to be rated. But that's just me.
Well, I agree with you, Paul. And I mean, I don't want to sell Mike Leach short as a coach, and I think he really did not. I mean, he got off to such a great start, and then it literally fell apart. He is a very good coach, and he's got quarterbacks to work with, but and a schedule to boot. But I think in that, you know, there's just too much to overcome to have that kind of finish.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to, you know, be on his bad side. I mean, I'm not. I mean, I could not. There's just, I don't know. As far as being a coach, it's just what they go through is just unbelievable. And you know, my hat's off to any coach that has a, you know, that has a Power Five, a football team. And anyway, he is a good coach, but I just hope if he's going to be that kind of a team, he's going to have to change some things. So, anyway.
Now, Paul, I'll say this. I thought he was very stubborn last year early on and really kind of missed the moment before the season. He's not the only one. I think Ogeron had some issues too. But I mean, Leach is just an unusual guy, but from the people with whom I've spoken at Mississippi State, they like him. And you know, people that matter, that they're saying, you know, as quirky as he is, he's still a really good coach. And I think that's what matters.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you on that. And I saw that and I saw the interview and the questions you had asked, and I'm totally in agreement with you. It's just a measuring tool, so to speak. But anyway, I just wanted to put my two cents in, and thank you for allowing me to come on your show.
Paul, thank you for the kind words, and so glad to hear you're doing better. Talk again soon, hopefully.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give you a shout again.
You got it. Can't wait.
All right, bye-bye.
All the best. And let's check in next with Dr. Mel. Mel, how are you?
Great, Paul. How are you today?
We're doing well.
Well, first of all, let me thank you. We've been COVID now, for post-COVID, for a few days, but I just want to commend you. You are a great, great sports analyst, as I would say. You are a counselor. And you do so much more than just sports entertainment. So you've been a great blessing to a lot of people across the United States this past year. Do a fantastic job. And by the way, Richard Jaffa says hello. And but my question.
Well, hey, thank you. Tell Richard for me this, okay? I miss seeing him, and I hope I never need him for a lawyer.
Yes. Okay. Well, he's the best, as you know.
If the FBI has just shown up at your house and arrested you for a major crime, he's the guy you call. I mean, there's no question. If suddenly I wake up and there's a dead body next to me, I'm not even checking the body. I'm calling Richard.
Absolutely. My question is, Paul, and I want to know what your thoughts on OTE.
Mel, for some reason, I missed the end of your question. What was the question again?
Yes. What are your thoughts on OTE? A couple of days ago, they brought Kevin Ollie on board. And you talk about the image and likeness of what OTE is. OTE is all-time elite athletes. And these athletes that are age 16 to 18, they sign over their NCAA eligibility, and they promising them $100,000. They going to provide supposedly in-house education, and they purchasing their image and likeness, and they going to put them in the NBA. So this is well beyond one and done. These kids will never see a college campus. So I wanted to know, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, about Mel, I must confess, I've heard of it. I don't know much about it, but I do think it's an interesting concept. And give me a little more time on that, because I just hate to give you a flippant response without being particularly well-versed.
Right. Okay. Well, I know you'll look into it, but I thought it was really interesting. These kids, the top 300 athletes, the ESPN 100 or 300 top athletes, they going after these kids, and so... It reminds me of some years ago when the sports agents, probably maybe even a little bit before your time, Norby Walters.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember Norby.
Signing these kids. Okay. Right.
Yeah. Mel, Norby worked with another guy, and a guy named Jim Abernathy, and I got to know him really well. He was a sports agent who went rogue, and I think – I don't know whether he went to jail or not, and he became a minister, and we got together for lunch one day, and we spent the afternoon together, and I think I was really impressed by him, even though he had been about as corrupt as you could possibly be, and yeah, I got an insight into how ugly and treacherous this business really is. Now, this is 25 years ago, not 30 years, maybe 20 years ago. And yeah, I'd say it's significantly worse right now with what these people do to try to, and they end up ruining young people's lives. Forget their careers. They don't have a career after these people get their hooks into them. We're up against a break. We hope you'll stick around. 30 minutes to go. Mike Tannenbaum right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We welcome you back, and it's always really exciting for me to welcome in our next guest, Mike Tannenbaum. I used to hang out with him all the time when we did the New York deal. And Mike, for those of you who don't know, is former GM of not only the Jets, but the Miami Dolphins. And Mike, thanks for joining us. Great to see you, and really eager to hear your thoughts on the draft. How have you been?
I'm doing great. I miss you, Paul, and it was great hanging out with you in New York, and
hopefully one day when our world gets back to normal, we could do it again. And I really appreciate being with you.
Well, thank you. I know this is a well-plowed material, but as someone who's been in that room and understands, first of all, what is it like on draft night to be holding a major pick like so many of these guys have been? And, you know, I mean, it seems like it is chaotic. Describe it to us.
Well, if you run a good draft process, and I think over the years between the two organizations that I was with for most of my career, the Jets and Dolphins, I think the process continued to get more refined. But the hay's really in the barn, and you want to make good fundamental decisions, and you have to react accordingly. And unexpected things are going to happen, Paul. And I can tell you, maybe I dealt with the most historic unexpected thing that ever happened, which was Laremy Tunsil. So going back to 2016... Sure. We have the 13th pick in the draft. We have a good, not great left tackle in Brandon Albert. Our number one player on the board was Laremy Tunsil. Laremy Tunsil is a great kid, a great person. He had made a mistake. It's well documented. He went from being 1 to 13, and you're sitting there, and it was just too good of an opportunity to pass up.
Yeah, and as just an observer of the draft, I mean, that was the most bewildering night, I think, in draft history, was it not?
Absolutely. And we're sitting there, and obviously we're watching in real time like everybody else, Paul, and we're thinking, well, he'll go to 5 because Baltimore needs a left tackle. They take Ronnie Stanley. Then he gets to 9-10, and then we're thinking the Saints at 12 will take him because maybe they need another offensive lineman. And then we really relied on our area scout, Matt Winston. Matt's older brother, Eric, was the former NFLPA president. Matt Winston one day will be an NFL GM, very thorough in his background. Laremy's a great kid, great relationship with his mother. He was a good teammate at Ole Miss. Obviously, he had made a mistake, but we felt really good about our preparation, and we were able, in our opinion, get the best player that year with the 13th pick.
So we all know where where the first two clubs are going to be this year, the Jets and obviously the Jaguars. The one that gets all the attention here and elsewhere is where the 49ers are. Give us what you think they are thinking in relation to Mac Jones.
You know, Paul, for me, you don't give up two first-round picks and a third-round pick not knowing exactly what you're going to do. I think it's Mac Jones. I've been saying since January when I saw Mac Jones in person in the championship game, he's Matt Ryan to me. And when you think about all the success Kyle Shanahan had in Atlanta with Matt Ryan, this is a younger, slightly more athletic version of Matt Ryan, in my opinion. I think he's a perfect fit for Kyle Shanahan, who really relies on play action. He relies on boots and rollouts, and I think it plays to Mac Jones' strength, even though Mac Jones is by no means an elite athlete. I think he has a chance to be a really good pro player. He has fantastic accuracy. He allows his players to make big plays, run after catch. And obviously, I know he's throwing to elite receivers, but his ball placement is really exceptional.
Mike, I realize some of this has been overdone, and that can easily happen when we're talking about the draft. But where are you on Justin Fields?
I like Justin Fields, and here's one of the conundrums, to be candid, about the draft process. I went to his very first practice at Ohio State. He had just transferred from Georgia. He goes by me at practice, and I look at him. I'm like, my gosh, this guy looks like Cam Newton. Jacob Fromm, the quarterback at Georgia, who won the job, I'm thinking he must be Superman to keep this guy on the bench. But there was a couple games this year he struggled, Indiana, Northwestern. His accuracy wasn't great. His decision-making wasn't great, and here's the tough part about evaluating quarterbacks, Paul, which is if you're looking at Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Justin Fields, and you're trying to separate them, well, Justin Fields had two bad games against Indiana and Northwestern. Well, Trey Lance played in one game, and how does he get the benefit of the doubt when Justin Fields didn't? You know, he played against a very rugged defensive schedule. There are some good defenses in the Big Ten, so I like Justin Fields. I wish those two games were a little bit better. I still have him going in the top 10. I did a mock draft last week. I had him going 8 overall. I think he would be really well suited to go to a team where he wouldn't have to play a lot in year one. I think all these quarterbacks would, to be candid. And we'll see how it goes. But I think he has compelling upside.
Mike, how do you differentiate the three wide receivers, two from Alabama, one from LSU, and then Kyle Pitts? And we talked to Dan Mullen about an hour ago. We all know what he thinks about Kyle Pitts, and he explained the differentiation. But how would you figure that one out sitting there on draft night?
So I would really rely a lot on my defensive coaches. I host a call every week with former head coaches and GMs, and we've talked a lot about Kyle Pitts. And to a man, the defensive coaches, guys like Wade Phillips, Eric Mangini, what we talked about was he's going to be just thought about as a receiver. He may put his hand in the dirt and be in line, but no one thinks you're going to be able to run behind him early. This guy's not Rob Gronkowski. He is a dynamic playmaker, and I think teams are going to just treat him as a receiver. So he'll be covered by corners, safeties. I don't think there'll be any team that could put a linebacker on him. He's too dynamic. I think it's going to take some time for him to grow into a more traditional tight end role, but he's a phenomenal weapon. You know, for me, as it relates to the receivers, Ja'Marr Chase is number one. I think he has great body control. I think he's a little bit more of an athletic Larry Fitzgerald who could go up and grab the ball, high point it, change direction. And if Justin Jefferson was the best receiver last year and he was the fifth one taken overall, we got to remember the year before, Ja'Marr Chase outplayed Justin Jefferson. So I would put him ahead of the two Alabama receivers. And then for me, it's Jalen Waddle. I think Jalen Waddle is Tyreek Hill. He has game-changing dynamic speed. Again, I was at the championship game, Paul. He's out there with one leg. You talk about competitive toughness. I saw everything I needed to see that night. And I really like Devontae Smith. I think he reminds me a lot of Marvin Harrison. He is undersized, Paul. And we have to start getting used to saying this in the NFL. Can he withstand the rigors of a 17-game regular season? And when you look at Devontae Smith, you hope he can do it, but that would be the one concern.
Mike, I'm curious about one thing in particular. We've had private conversations about Nick Saban when we were together in New York, but how would you describe his influence on people like you in the past and you know so many others in the NFL? Because you know he has such a reputation. You do have to ask his thoughts. And, you know, when you're grabbing a Nick Saban player, I realize some are better than others, but what does it mean when you're in the war room trying to figure it all out?
That player's coming from a pro program that they are well-coached, disciplined. They're going to be accountable. You know, it could be like for us taking Kenyon Drake in the third round one year. Kenyon Drake was an explosive playmaker who questions about his size, could be every down back. Obviously, Kenyon's gone on to have a very good NFL career. But when you're sitting there in a draft room, Paul, and you have 5 or 7 minutes to make a decision, and it's player A or player B, and it's a Nick Saban program, there's so many things you know that come with that from an accountability standpoint. And there's a side of Nick that people don't often see, a warm and nurturing side. Now, look, does he hold people accountable? Absolutely. But he also cares deeply about his players. And if you could get through, you know, 3-4 years in his program, it says a lot about you and your commitment. And I think, you know, coach invests a lot in his players. And look, nothing's perfect. There's always exceptions. But oftentimes, a lot of these guys come out and have good NFL representative careers.
Final question. I've been meaning to ask you this for a couple of years. For those who don't know, you've got an amazing resume of education, including a law degree from a very prominent Southern school. How did you end up doing what you're doing, what you did in the NFL, as opposed to going into sports law or some other form of law?
A lot of luck. I was an unpaid intern for the New Orleans Saints in 1994-95, and that's when the collective bargaining agreement started with a salary cap for a year and a half. I put my thoughts together in a book in terms of what I believed was the most efficient way to run an NFL team. I sent out 60 books, Paul, in terms of what I thought we should do and how to build a team. I got 59 rejection letters, and Bill Belichick hired me in Cleveland, and I was able to I stuck around for a couple of years, I guess, between Cleveland. And what happened was the Browns became the Ravens. Coach Belichick went to New England. Coach Parcells and Coach Belichick left New England after 96. Belichick recommended me to Parcells, and that was obviously my big break.
And just think, you could be in court today as opposed to being on the Fine Bomb Show. Mike, thank you very, very much. Can't wait to see you soon. It's always great to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Paul. I miss you and love your show.
Thank you so much. Mike Tannenbaum, just a fantastic analyst and recovering lawyer. We will take a break. Much more to come. Well, not that much more, but a few minutes right after this. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.